Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI-FM, Minneapolis-St. Paul. Online and archived at KFAI.org. The community's true voice.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Hallucination.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Cotton cup, hit me cup, baby.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Karagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Jaga. And this portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, let's get our friend Robert Lilligren on right away here. And I know he's got a crunch time here. Things to do and people to see, but we always want to check in with Robert here and as long as we can. So welcome, Robert, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minnesota, or Minneapolis. And a lot moving here. Our friends are going back to the house, and we're going to have, they're going to be playing nice in the Capitol now.
Yeah, bonjour, Haley, bonjour, Robert. Thanks for having me on today. Always a pleasure to be with you. And as a lot of folks know, but some may not, our state legislature has been at sort of a stall or a stalemate. We have some unresolved election issues. We have very close margins or essentially ties in our House. Our Senate was tied for a while. That's since been resolved. And so it's been an exercise in negotiating power sharing and also sort of expressing the authorities you have. So our Democratic Party, which is the Democratic Farmer Labor Party here in Minnesota, DFL, has sort of boycotted the House session until they could negotiate this power sharing. There's a special election coming up, which will kind of restore balance, literally a tie within our House. So they finally negotiated this power sharing and they all went back to work today.
Yeah, wow, that's great. And also, you know, the Democrats have saved what seemed to be like a power grab. And so pushing back. And one of the things I want to say, Robert, too, is I was watching, and I mentioned this, I think, yesterday, I was watching KSTP TV and their polls, and I was just kind of going, oh, here we go. And the polls were big time in for the Democrats, all except for getting paid by not working. But I was pleasantly surprised that because it seems like the news was really slanted one way towards the Republicans, and it was good to see that. And I think maybe that's part of why the Republicans finally came back to the table.
You know, I think that's right. I do have to say, you know, it was kind of a risky strategy for the Democrats, but I do feel that people supported that. You know, it was clear the open seat that election is being, special elections being held for, is a strongly Democratic district. And so it's pretty clear to everyone that it'll be a tie at the end of the day, exactly a split House. And so the kind of grown-up thing to do is to negotiate that power sharing. The Republicans tried to sort of seize control of the whole legislative session. And our Secretary of State, who by law is the convener of the House until they've elected their own leadership, determined that because there was not a majority, a quorum of members present, they couldn't do any business. the courts upheld that determination, and so we were just kind of stalled out. The Republican caucus was going into the sort of into faux session every day, passing laws with zero Democrats and without a quorum present, so none of that really matters. And so now I can't wait to see more of the details of this power sharing agreement. I know the Republican leader will be speaker at least through 2026, and we'll see how the committee chairs are divvied up. I think the Republicans will be in their chairs until March or something, but it's very interesting. I think it's only the second time, or at least in my memory, that the House has been actually tied.
Yeah. Well, I know they were talking earlier before the person, I guess in Roseville, they found out that he didn't live in the district. They were talking about sharing, having co-leaders right. of each group.
Right. And that's what our state Senate did for the brief time they were actually tied due to a special election. They now have a majority, a really renowned senator from Minneapolis passed recently. Mm-hmm. And so the special election to fill her seat. So the Senate was actually tied for the start of the session. And they did. They negotiated power sharing. There were co-chairs, one from each party for the committees and leadership. And then once the Democrats regained the majority, then they voted that sort of power sharing agreement down, and now it's back in Democratic control.
Yeah, and a good thing. And because we've been all pretty nervous what's going on nationally, and we've always appreciated our local government here in Minnesota. And so we're back to normal in a sense. The tie is going to be a little difficult to get too much done, but you know, we talked to a lot of representatives and senators on Native Roots Radio, and they seem to think that they can cross party lines with things. So that'd be great.
Right. Well, they're going to have to, right? Figure out some bipartisan approaches, at least in the House, just to move anything. They're constitutionally obligated to pass a budget this session. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And I know you've been spending time over at the Capitol, right?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. You know, it's funny. I try to group, you know, count a group of people and then kind of see how many people are there, because it seems like the news is always lowballs us on our protest. And it was a great crowd. It was a little worrisome when I got there because I didn't go to the college to march in there because, well, you know, I'm old and delicate. I needed to stay in my car for a bit. And I got there and there was a couple hundred people there, and I went, oh, okay, that's cool. And then they started rolling in like a big parade. Nice. Two big parades came in, and it was well received. And it was really interesting too, Robert. I kind of think of this as a good thing. There were no politicians there. This was all grassroots and nice. Really interesting.
Right. And what were you protesting?
Everything. Trump, yeah. Elon Musk, everybody, there was chants from impeachment, put him in the jail. There was all these things. So, and people got to speak their mind, and there was a lot of chanting and community, and hadn't seen that and been, or had to, I guess, really been in a group like that for a few years. So I had to put my AIM jacket on with my Water's Life insignia that was done at by Rory Wakeham up about 7-8 years ago. And I had everything on except my red headband.
Great. Well, thanks for being there. Thanks for representing. And yeah, it did look, I wasn't there in person, but I was following it on social media, and it looked like a good crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. And I think it's just the start, especially with what's going on here. But Robert, I know we're going to got only a minute left here in the segment, so maybe we can talk about this in the next one. But it seems like the courts are working now, the federal courts, and blocking a lot of stuff.
Right. Right. And this whole strategy, right, planned chaos, and courts shouldn't have to be reversing or negating presidential actions or presidential executive orders should be aligned with our constitution and with our laws. And so this is strategic, you know, it's to wear us down. And yeah. I think it's having the opposite effect, right? It's bringing us together, yeah. energizing us in a resistance posture. And so it's going to be an interesting 4 years, but I feel like we are ready to face
it. Yes. Hey, we're here with Robert Liljegren, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, and also a White Earth Ojibwe citizen. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Yes, they do. Hey, we're here with Dr. Stately, President and Executive Officer of Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, and we're just talking about some fun stuff here, but Dr. Stately, we had to cut you off here for a commercial. Do you want to finish that thought about $10 eggs and what's going on there?
I was just saying that, you know, people, I'm praying that people wake up, because the significant number of people who voted for him, I think, have their head in the sand most of the time. I've talked to a couple of people who are like relatives and friends who, like, you know, they didn't want to vote for. I'm befuddled, because I want to talk about like what I think is a really not spoken a whole lot about thing, but I'm too hot about it right now. I'll probably, is your producer's finger on his button?
Like, yeah, he's, we got a 7-second delay, so you're good. Back at the mothership, we'll give Patrick a forewarning there. Patrick, it's be like Bobby Wilson being on. We always have to be careful.
I'm like, I cannot believe the stupidity of human beings sometimes. It really does. One of the things I will tell you is that, you know, like, I can't believe that people didn't understand, like, did they not reflect on the, his first, four years in office? Did they not spend time thinking about, like, okay, what would this look like this time around? Right. You know, he did the same thing last time. He implemented tariffs and things started to go up. Right. And
on steel.
Yeah. Right. And, it's like, I read this really interesting article yesterday on The Atlantic about tariffs, and like how most people don't understand how tariffs work, right? It was actually an article. The title of our article said something like, the complexity of tariffs and why Trump doesn't understand them, or something. And anyway, it was like, or the problem with Trump's tariffs. And what's interesting is, like, most people don't understand that, like, you know, a lot of the things that tariffs will impact are things like the actual products that they make, or the things that they go into, are things we don't see and we don't think of, right? They used a couple of different examples of that. Like, the largest glass producer in the entire world, that importer that the United States uses for glass, is in Mexico. They have a couple of plants in America and also in Canada, but the company, is their primary space and business is in Mexico. And then I love how the article was like, and you might not be that impacted by it because maybe you don't do a whole lot of buying of glass, right? You know, like you own the same set of glass you bought 25 years ago. But these people make big, huge sheets of glass, right, that are used in buildings and making windows for houses and all these other things. And they said, I bet you'll care about the cost of glass once you take a look at, like, how much the cost of your apartments will go up, the cost of your condos, your new housing, all these things. You'll care about how much glass costs when you're paying twice the amount of money that you paid for windows this year than you did 10 years ago.
Well, you know, a percentage of people are still going to blame the Democrats. It's the people that you're talking about that just don't pay attention and voted because they didn't like Kamala or they didn't like that Biden.
Well, I mean, I think people didn't vote for Kamala because they're just racist and they don't understand it. They're basically they have some under, like, they don't trust women and they don't trust black people. Right. I don't think they'll be openly transparent about admitting that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big part of it. It's like, you know, the whole thing about, like, this whole conversation that people have been having. I listen to a lot of political news podcasts and stuff. I, you know, like I told you, I listen to Ezra Klein. Not that I don't love your show, but I love Ezra Klein as well. And then and, you know, I listen to all these, you know, radio Freakonomics and Radio News Hour and stuff like that. A lot of people are talking about how, like, you know, well, you know, the Democratic Party outspent, like, you know, the Republican Party, you know, significantly. You know, she spent $1 billion in like 4 months. And while that might be true, mm-hmm. billionaires, significantly oligarchs invested in him, they use their social media platforms and a bunch of other things that have a value to them, correct? All right. And a few other things. It's like, so, like, you can't, you're like comparing apples and oranges here. These things are not the same thing. And then the other part of it is like, well, you know, we didn't really talk a whole lot about the, you know, how America has some significant problems with race still. And, like, right. The idea, you know, of electing a black and Indian, you know, child of immigrant parents into the president's office was a big challenge for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I remember
back in the 1930s or 40s or 50s.
Yeah, I remember the first time around, Trump didn't have to pay for ads because the press was giving him free carte blanche. And again, a lot of this election loss, I blame on the corporate media because of the normalized all his BS. They never challenged it. They just reported it.
And, like, the big, huge ones. Like, I mean, Washington Post, who is now owned by the guy who went to his inauguration and sat next to him at Mar-a-Lago and dinner,
right.
You know, Bezos was like, you know, he's like, at the last minute, he, you know, he used his power as the publisher and the owner of.
To not endorse.
And it's like, you know, I think the thing is that there's really, like, so I hope that people begin to wake up and realize, like, you know, I mean, I was born and raised and grew up in an era when, you know, I read, like, 1984, and all of these, like, dystopian and sort of, like, you know, and I was raised at the, you know, I was raised at the time that, you know, the civil rights movement was active. Born and raised during that time, as, you know, my family was very involved in, like, AIM and protestation and all these other things. It's like, I was very, as a child, I was very aware, and as a young person, I was very aware of just, you know, of how things worked and didn't work and how wealth kept young, how kept, you know, poor people more and more disadvantaged because it kept them wealthy. Like, you know, and I think what I hope people begin to see is, like, okay, well, you know, you elected a bunch of billionaires to sort of, like, help out and to run the country. And they're not going to, like, they're not going to give you their money.
No.
They're going to make more money and you're going to have a lot less. And you're going to have a lot less that costs you more. You'll pay more for less. It's kind of like, you know, the package of cilantro that I bought last week at Aldi, which was smaller than the last bag I bought, but it was just as expensive, but not more.
Sometimes that tastes like soap, I hear. But for me, I like the little cilantro.
I love a little cilantro, and I'm salty that I have to pay 25 cents more for it, for less.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, one of the things I think I thought you were getting at the end of the first segment was that, you know, hopefully people, it will hit people that voted for him.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. And they'll whine around and then they'll blame the Democrats for something.
Right.
Like, why didn't you stop him?
Right. It's funny.
Oh, wait. Do I have to vote for you to stop him? Or I thought you were going to stop him.
Wendy was here listening and she laughed too when you said that. Right, Wendy?
Yeah, I think the whole thing is just ridiculous. Robert mentioned that I was in an Uber the other night and it was a woman. And I was talking about, she's picked me up from the mall. I went to the movies and I just said, wow, I haven't been to the mall in so long and things have really changed. And, you know, there's a lot of places that have a lot of shops that are empty and mm-hmm. I don't know. And she goes, well, maybe Trump will fix all that. I was like, what? Wow. Really? Are you really serious? I said, you voted for him? And she said, yeah, I voted for him. And I was just like, it took me back, first of all. Should I say?
Yeah.
Okay, so she was an African-American woman. She had an accent. I asked her where she came from, and she said, "Well, I was born in Ethiopia. I've been in the United States for 20 something years." And I just said to her, "Well, what made you vote for him? I don't get that. Like, if anything, I would imagine that she would want to stand with another woman that looked like her." It just kind of shocked me. But anyway, she said it was because he's Christian. That was her answer. He's Christian.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, it's scary out there.
Well, Dr. Stately, thanks again for stopping in. I know you got an important appointment to make, and I appreciate you coming in and speaking your truth. Really, it's good seeing you, and I'll see you at the Capitol Wednesday.
Maybe, I'll be there in spirit, if not in bodily form.
12 noon.
We'll be right back with Native Roots Radio.
KFAI is proud to present Eddie Ninevolt at the 7th Street Entry on Tuesday, February 11th. Atlanta-based blues and soul artist Eddie Ninevolt is touring behind his latest album, Saratoga, showcasing his fresh, fiery spin on Southern soul, blues, rock, and funk with his signature wit and sharp observations of modern America, placing him squarely in the here and now. Opening the show is acoustic guitar duo Cousin Curtis. Tickets for Eddie Ninevolt can be found at the First Avenue website. Visit first-avenue.com for more details.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Yes, they do. Hey, we are with our friend Arvina Martin, CEO, Executive Director of Merge Wisconsin, and our lifeline here in Wisconsin. We love, we get an update, weekly update from the governor, but this is bigger than that. We have Arvina Martin. Oh, welcome, Arvina.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Right on. Hey, I just, I don't know if I sent it to Haley, but I just, during the break, I saw that I am on Care 11, the news. I had a few things to say to the crowd, because, you know, I like crowds.
That you're good for press. You know, you can speak and you can speak eloquently as to the situation and what you want to express, and that kind of communication is a really big deal when it comes to activism.
Yeah, I was going to make a joke, but I really appreciate that compliment, really. And it's funny too, being on the air for 9 years, I've been able to put together sentences now and been practicing 5 days a week, an hour a day. Right, Haley?
Oh, absolutely. It's the best practice you could get.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about Emerge, because again, we're not in Wisconsin especially, but I know Minnesota's coming up on another election cycle, and let's talk about Emerge and how important it is for your organization to reach out and also help.
Yeah. So the Emerge Wisconsin, if you are not familiar, is an organization that recruits and trains Democratic women and non-binary folks who feel comfortable in female-centered spaces to run for office. We've actually had a renewed interest in our program because of the events of the last few weeks, because of the major impacts that the Trump administration is already beginning to wreak havoc on, you know, all of us Americans. And so we are reopening our applications. Our website is wi.emergeamerica.org, and you can find our application on our website. You know, it's very important to me personally, you know, as a Ho-Chunk Inuk, that we engage more Native women in the political process as well. There's my cat, one of my cats. You know, our voices are important and our experiences are important. And we need those voices and those experiences in our legislative houses, in the executive branch. You know, our voices are valid, and our experiences that we lived are important. So, you know, they deserve to be heard at the level as everybody else's voices. And, you know, people think about campaigns and they think that they know, you know, what they do because they vote. Maybe they pay attention, but a campaign can be a really intricate thing. And you have to be very flexible. You have to be organized or have someone who is organized, who can, you know, help you with deadlines, help you make sure that you, you know, practice for your speeches, et cetera. You know, that's what we do at Emerge. We train folks, and we make sure that they have all of the nuts and bolts that they need to put together a campaign that is authentic to them and themselves and to their own candidacy. We don't do cookie cutter candidates. One of our alumna is in the news again as well. Former Secretary Deb Haaland.
Yes.
Did she actually announce, or did the news
She did announce like a day ago. I was gonna just bring that up. Great minds think alike.
Yeah, so she has gone through our political training in New Mexico, and you know, she has been involved politically for a long time. She was also the state chair of the New Mexico Democrats before she was elected to Congress. But I actually got to see her last week at the DNC meeting, and she told me herself about running, and mm-hmm. I am just over the moon. Mm-hmm. You know, if elections in Wisconsin at the same time weren't so contested, I would consider flying down to help knock doors and you know, do some texting or whatever her campaign needs, so we can have the first Native woman governor in the United States. And she would be an Emerge grad.
Wow.
That would be so cool.
I got to get the applause up for that.
Yeah.
Well, we missed out on our lieutenant governor becoming the first governor, but this is great news, and I'm glad you brought that up, because how important is we're finding out too with my other job how important it is that we have boots on the ground and people that are engaged with what's happening, because right now everything's happening in lightning speed.
Absolutely. And we need to pay attention to the sources of information that we are getting information from, you know, whether that's social media, whether that is the TV news, et cetera. Do people still read magazines? I don't think we get many anymore. but you know, you know, finding the balance for yourself as to what is what you can handle. You know, pay attention to the news when you can. If you need a break, you know, take it. Because this fight is going to be a long time. You know, we've got 4 years of this lined up. And so we should prepare and take care of ourselves and take care of each other too, because this is, you know, when you care about something and when the stakes are so high, it is, you know, it can be extra emotional, and you really feel everything, you know. Yeah. And so self-care is going to be really important. And, you know, I always like the analogy of the choir, and that when you're singing a really long note, you know, maybe you're out of breath, but the people next to you are still singing. So you can take a breath and then keep singing, and then they can take the breath when they need it. So we need to think like that.
We did that in the Madison Scouts Drum and Bugle Corps too. Staggering breathing, we called it, but good call, Arvina. Oh,
yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, I really like that one. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit again, how important it is for you to come on the show. This is our 9th season now on the air, and you've brought in great information to all our listeners. But also that whole aspect that you talked about at the end, and that's keeping care of yourself. And I believe I've heard from our leaders in our nation that you need to take care of yourself. It's like first, because it's like being in a plane, and when the oxygen comes down, you need to put your oxygen mask on first before you help other people.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that society has really warped our sense of, you know, taking care of oneself. And you know, it's been a long time that people have been talking about self-care, and for a long time, and for a lot of people, it's seen as something additional or extra rather than something that's mandatory in order to function as a healthy human being.
Wow, great point. Really good point. And, you know, we try to get uncolonized with our thinking, too, as Native Americans and the people that I'm going to tell you, too, the thing I only when I spoke, and it's funny that the news got it. I didn't listen to it. I just saw the video. But the only thing I said is no one is illegal on stolen land. This is Native land. And that was it. I dropped the mic and walked away. So it's funny that they got me on the news.
I mean, that's a great soundbite and very apropos considering Trump wants to do it all again in the Gaza Strip, you know, and kick everybody out and make it the Riviera of the Middle East is what he said, which is horrifying. And, you know, obviously, we can relate as Native people to that kind of displacement for wealthy white landowners to make more money off of our resources.
Right. Well, I'm getting the Resist shirts out again. We started, as you probably know, Arvina, we started Native Roots Radio because of Standing Rock and all the misinformation and lack of information that was going out there. And we have a Resist shirt that we're going to pull out of retirement here. And because I saw a lot of posters that said, well, it said some bad things, but also I saw posters that said Resist. And we are the Resist experts or resistance experts as Natives.
Absolutely. And I kind of want to bring up something that I had heard from somebody else, is that people are getting to the point where they are deciding what their final, like what they're willing to do, like to what point they're willing to go to protect others. You know, principals saying, I will take being arrested to protect my kids. And if you're doing this kind of work, you know, it's something to consider, to make a decision to say, you know, I feel comfortable resisting till this point until my safety, you know, is threatened. I don't know what the lines are for everybody, but thinking about it ahead of time might ease anxiety and tensions, you know, while you are doing your actions. That was kind of a jumbled thought, but one that I thought was so important to think of, like what you're willing to sacrifice for this.
It's really interesting that you say that too, because there was a few people today that talked about that. And one was a school teacher coming there instead of going into school and willing not to sacrifice too is his students. And I just got to say this, I know we only have a minute left, but the first time around when I was teaching high school, I had an ELL class, which is English learners. And the day that Trump was elected, half the class disappeared and never came back. And I hope that, but that's a thing that we have to protect. We have to protect our young ones. And again, you know, everyone's illegal. This is stolen land. And the people that are on from this continent not being able to live here is, well, we're used to it, but it is, well, it makes me angry. Arvina Martin, Executive Director of Emerge Wisconsin, a big peeny geeky, thank you so, so much for coming on during these times and the times before and the times that are going to come.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, we'll talk to you hopefully next week and be caught up again with what's happening in Wisconsin and with the Emerge Wisconsin. A big peeny geeky, thank you so much.
Honey Shuck Jolie.
I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, we are here with a couple of high-powered guests, Anna Negret, Interim Director for the Minnesota Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Office here in Minnesota, and our friend Rory Wakemup, artist and all-around groovy guy. Hey, Rory, hi, Anna, good to see you guys again.
Hi.
Hey, all excited here. Hey, can you talk a little bit? We're going to be talking about February 14th in Minneapolis and the march that we do. I don't know how many we've done, but they're always very powerful. And I know your group and I know Rory's been involved for many, many years. And let's talk about what's going to happen that day and maybe kick it off a little bit and talk about the statistics of our MMIR in our Native communities first, Anna.
Yeah, good evening. I believe it's, Rory, I think it's the 10th year, right? Indigenous Lives Matter kicked it off back 10 years ago, and their founders moved up to Duluth area, but so we've been doing the march here for, Rory, I want to say 10 years. I think you've been pretty involved from the jump, right?
9 or 10, yeah. I think we would have to do an archival dig. But yeah, we'll have to have a decade celebration here for sure next year. We'll plan for, it'll be 10 years for sure next year. How about that?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Anna, some of the statistics here, that our community deals with, I don't know if a lot of our, allies that listen to the show are really, clued in on that. I wonder if you could really pop out some statistics about our relatives.
Yeah, you know, the office will hit its 3-year anniversary here on the, I want to say the 28th of February, that we've been office as a state, but around the nation, you know, we've always known that our relatives go missing or murdered at a disproportionate rate. In Minnesota, indigenous relatives make up 1.4% of the general population, but indigenous women alone are 0.8% and make up 8% of the homicide rate. So we're seeing, you know, we're seeing our relatives go be murdered, and the state has recognized through the leadership of folks that, like you just had on, Ruth Buffalo and Senator Kunish, who I know is a regular. They really pushed to make sure that things that we started to respond to this in a good way. Our missing relatives, we have I think the last official stat that we had was, you know, in any given day, between 27 and 54 relatives are missing in Minnesota every day. And so we're seeing that. We're here now that we're an official office, we hear more and more these stories of families who just don't have answers. And so we're pushing for that. And so this walk is, this march is really important to kind of come together as a community and really support the families, letting them know they're not alone, because that's the sense, is that we feel like our families have felt like they've been doing this alone and we're not talking about it enough. And so we're here trying to change that. Rory, I know that you have been like instrumental and make these beautiful things. You can see in the background some of the things that Rory has done to really bring awareness to the issue. So I'm going to hand it to him to talk about that aspect as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was going to say, Rory, art is so important in our community, and you've been doing this for a long time. And talk a little bit, like Anna said, about your role and how art really plays a big part of this.
Well, for me, I'm a visual learner, so visuals help me really break the ice, or our community in general, break the ice into the broader community. And I think, because when you think of the statistics of us, you know, being murdered at a 1% or 0.8% or 8% of homicide, and you think about like the historical genocide of us that's reduced us and forced assimilation and the pseudoscience of genocide and enrollment, we're only 1-2%, maybe 2% of the whole population as it is. So that percentage is, puts it, like, if you put it into perspective, that's, I think, 20-50% chance one of these things is going to happen to us. You know, so it's a 30% chance a Native woman's going to get raped. You know, so everything, so when you put it in the perspective of, you know, like, that's, that way, it's like it's almost a guarantee we're gonna, and it's because we're dehumanized by pop culture, art, and media, you know. So art is also at the tail end, combats that, so we can own our own messaging and humanize ourselves. But in the micro, the first march, I didn't even know it was happening until the day of. I saw women marching and just started marching with them, and then. But then we just slowly started planning. It starts with messaging first of the folks that work with us every day. And then with that messaging, they basically wanted to celebrate the lives of our relatives, and not the victimhood or the tail end, you know, giving that abuse the power, but giving our lives the power. The art is too also meant to celebrate the lives of the people, and then also bringing families together, that, because really, of 7 degrees of separation, literally everyone's got this and has this experience in their family. There's not a Native person not affected by this. I mean, you'd be really hard pressed to find someone that isn't related, has a relative that isn't missing, one, and then everyone's related to a woman or child or a person has a child that's been molested or raped, you know, so it's, you know, that's, yeah. Anyway, we get into the histories, you know, that they don't teach in school, and that's now our legal, you know, I think they're trying to make it illegal to teach in college now as well, or just to know it might be imprisonable. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I digress. No, but then, so the art workshops themselves, I kind of modeled it off of my uncle Earl up in White Earth would just teach us how to make like birch bark baskets and quill work and beadwork in the basement and in the family. And then, you know, we go off, we pilgrimage to ceremonies in South Dakota. And I realized there's a parallel there too, folks. Working together for art objects or regalia for a common cause, you know. And then in that, you build that camaraderie and conversation that strengthens family or strengthens that ceremony and then strengthens each other, like pretty much art therapy, you know. So and I saw that with IP3 out at Standing Rock, how it worked on mass, you know. So I kind of made my own little, I got training from IP3 and you know, also have a master's degree in arts and whatnot and Native history. But then kind of congealed all that together and I just bring ideas to other organizations. And really it's been an honor to bring ideas to these women that sometimes they take it. Sometimes they're a bit much, or, you know, I tell folks, I try to land on Mars, but if we make it to the moon, still cool, you know, like I always go for way too much, but we always end up doing something cool.
Yeah.
But then, well, yeah, it's art therapy for the families too. Sorry. So they get to come in and be heard and listened to. And in the workshops, I found other people of color. It's really, it's a real common thing across the POC community, you know? It's definitely art therapy, not only for our community, but for other communities to maybe get enveloped or wrap in, or a connection point to share common grief and heal together.
Yeah, I know on the 12th, you'll be overseeing and helping people come in and do some screen printing. Let's talk a little bit about that. That's from 10 to 7, so that's a long day for you and people coming in. Talk about some of the parameters, what you need from people to come in to do this work. And I know we give out shirts and everything, and you're a big part of that. But let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. At my workshops, I don't give out shirts. What it is, you bring your own fabric and we'll screen print for free. And I tell orgs, if you bring more than like 5 things, you know, you have to leave some employees, like you can't just off like 50 shirts and expect to pick them up later. You know, you got to leave some employees. So it's very volunteer based and community based. And we do work hard, don't get me wrong, but we do have orgs that set up ahead of time that I'm real pussy. Like we have leftovers from last year, but generally speaking, it's sometimes like, Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition, Native American Community Clinic. They definitely bring a lion's share of shirts to give away. That'll be like 500 to 1,000 items we'll try to print that will be given away the next day. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, if you bring your own fabric, we'll screen print for free, but that's 1 or 2 items. But as a community member, I've seen families, we've just showed them how to pull screens and they get into it. And then, you know, they'll go home and get their laundry basket and bring back all the cotton that'll fit under a screen, you know? And then some folks won't do anything. They'll just sit there and eat and talk and share. And that's great too. You know, it's really whatever capacity you can be there. It's just lovely to have community there. And you know, we used to make posters. This year we're not so it's just every year depends on budget and time and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll have at least 8 screens pulling at a time. Volunteers are lining up. And then the shirts do take, they do have to dry overnight. Oh, 1 minute till break. I'm hearting space. but yeah, volunteers welcome and bring all the cotton fabric. Cotton works best.
Well, Anna, we got, you got scarves you gave out last year, this year too, right?
Yeah, we'll have some blank red bandanas that, that could be printed. And yeah, we'll have the, we'll have more of the scarves from last year. But just, yeah, we really want to encourage people to come out to the screen printing, to the march. We want to support, lend support to families and really let them know that, that they're not alone in this. We talk about what it means to be a good relative in the community. And I want to really bring that home this year. How would you search for your relative if they were missing? These are our nieces. These are our nephews. Like, they're our family. When we talk about Hunkah families or adopting each other, like, these are people, these are relatives that are missing. This isn't somebody else's daughter. These are our, these are our kids. These are our brothers, sisters, grandmas, grandpas. So just bringing that home.
Right on. Well, we'll be talking about that more in the next segment. And you're listening to Native Roots Radio. We'll be right back.
KFAI is proud to sponsor Fancy Dress Party 2025 at the Hook and Ladder Theater on Friday, February 14th.
Celebrate Valentine's Day by dressing to impress and enjoying music by Malos Pasos, Maida, Crush Scene, and DJ Superbrush 427.
More information about KFAI's presentation of Fancy Dress Party 2025 is available at thehookmpls.com.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Ow! Hey, we are talking about what's coming up this week. And Anna, I want to get back to you. We're with Anna and Rory, and I want to get back to you about what you were saying at the end there. Let's talk a little bit about what's going to be a little different this year and the little different focus that you were just talking about before we went to break.
Yeah. You know, last year we really tried to be intentional about making sure that we say the names. We always say that, right? Say their names. And so we want to really acknowledge relatives. We're starting to try and get a more comprehensive list. As you all know, data is like one of the shortcomings that we don't have enough of to really give a represent a total look at everybody who has been impacted. And so we're trying to do better at that, but also really just calling on community to, like, our bandanas are sweet, our scarves are sweet, and our license plates, we're super happy to have that. But also just, like, really asking community, like, claim our relatives. This isn't somebody else's child who's missing. These are your nieces, your nephews, your brothers and sisters, your grandmas. And so just really trying to build that sense of community. Rory does that with bringing folks together through art and doing that, but really wanting to send, you know, messages to families and not just saying the words, really building up, like, they're not alone in this. And that's really something I want to push this year and do better as a state, is building that sense of community and letting families know they're not alone, because we hear too many of those stories of moms, of families, you know, having been responsible for searches after the, you know, little bit of buzz. If there's any media coverage on it at all, that goes away and families are left without answers. And so wanting to build up their support systems and show them what we as Indigenous people can do, not divided by tribes. We're Indigenous relatives, whether you're from North America, South America, Red Lake, Leech Lake, you know, the Dakota tribes, you know, we're relatives, and we have to be that. We've had enough impact of divide and conquer. So it's time to do better.
I agree 100%. And Rory, you were saying earlier, one out of three, out of the 78,000 relatives that live in the Twin Cities, that's a big number.
Yeah, for us as Native people, yeah, that's huge. But I get for the whole population of Minnesota, you know, it just kind of gets drowned out. No, pun intended there. I guess sorry for that analogy. And yeah, I was going to add on to what Anna was saying, but yeah, over the years we have. You know, we're at roughly 10,000 items, not including those red dresses we did during COVID because we couldn't assemble. But what she sparked my memory of a performance that everyone should check out that Rebecca Belmore did about 30 years ago, where she called out the names of the missing and murdered as an art piece in a video. And that's when video art and everything was it was not art back then. You know what I'm saying? It was movie or kitsch. It wasn't fine art yet or whatever. I don't know. It was whatever. But anyway, that was that. That's the art context. But I thought it was just such a strong piece 30 years ago. And that really influenced what I wanted to do, that messaging for art literally. You know, so I think it's like full circle that art can do that now. And I think, you know, maybe we need to start putting, stenciling names out on the streets with like these little red dress stencil cutouts and paint names in them and just get the names out there. You know, these aren't just statistics that can just get drowned out. You know, we're people and families that are still grieving and will continue to. And not only that, I don't want to get into the boarding school stuff, but, you know, that's my grandmother wouldn't teach us the language because she was afraid we'd get treated like she did for knowing it. And I mean, given this climate we're in now, I mean, how far off of right was she? You know what I'm saying? Anyway, I digress. But yeah, we got to, I want to, anyone, it's all about money, right? I have kids, I have bills to pay, and, you know, I'm sick now, and we got to still find ways to, I want to cover the streets with art and paint, you know, paint the streets red, names included. Yeah. Sorry.
That's a great idea.
Little tangential art brain there. Sorry.
That's a big deal. I went to, what's his name? The guy that does all the stuff in New York City, went to his museum where they do all the art, the graffiti and bring out the public message. So I'm all for that. Anna, we digressed a little bit with the numbers. I was off on the numbers a little bit, but I've always been told 1 out of 3 of our relatives, our lady relatives, will be abused in one way or another. And what I was getting at 78,000 people in the Twin Cities, half of them are women. That's a big number.
Yeah, actually, it depends on the type of violence, whether it's sexual violence or physical violence. Those numbers are, you know, 8 out of 10. And so they're even higher than as we start to dig deeper dives into the data and what we're seeing as national trends. And that's just... How can that be? But, you know, part of the MMI W task force report identified the root causes of MMIR as being, you know, when did we start going missing and become murdered at colonization? Yeah. And then that continued with the attempted genocide of our people through, you know, what Rory mentioned, not just boarding schools, but all the historical trauma on top of sexual objectification of Indigenous people and racism and sexism. There's so many, so many of those root causes that just that have impacted our community for so long. And so we're trying to raise awareness around it and address that. And within our office, we do a lot of training on different aspects within the general community, within law enforcement, victim service providers, court services, the child welfare system. And so we're doing that, but it's a drop in the bucket. We have a lot of work to do. So we're trying and showing up as the first step. So that's one of the reasons we're doing this walk, this march, just is to show up, to be there.
Absolutely. And then if we can, we got about a minute left. Anna, can you just say where the on the 12th, where that will be held, and also...
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic.
Oh, it's...